Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guests today are Maureen Reagan from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts and John Bennett from Lakeland College. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're talking today about the value of music and the other arts. So why are the arts valuable, John? Why do people care about them?
That's one of those things that I've never quite been able to figure out. As an example, in a course that I teach called Humanities Through the Arts, one of the things that we do is to focus on how artists express meaning, how they express their values through their arts. And we'll start by, for instance, looking at a painting such as Picasso's Guernica, and I'll ask them, why is this such a jumbled mess, this masterpiece? And as we talk about the fascist bombing of civilians, and this was long before the Allies did it to Dresden, they'll begin to see the anguish, the chaos, the horror, and they'll begin to see that Picasso is sharing his reaction to the bombing of this town, Guernica.
So it's an artist's reaction, an artist's response to something, a creative response that then other people can experience.
I think so. I think that when the arts work, the artist is able to communicate feeling, value, belief, something of that sort. It may be spiritual. It may not be.
It can be trivial.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maureen, your job with Krannert is to sort of help people learn enable people to have these kind of experiences. Mm-hmm. Do you like what you do?
I like what I do very much.
What's your background? How did you get into this?
My background, I actually came to school here at the U of I as a music major. I was in education, and I wanted to teach, but I pretty soon learned that I didn't want to teach. Huh. And I had a lot of respect for it, but I wasn't cut out to do it. I ended up getting a degree in performance, but with the knowledge that I would try to go into arts administration.
Performance in what?
Performance in the euphonium.
Euphonium?
Yes.
What is a euphonium?
It's a tuba that's been left in the dryer too long. Sounds like a low French horn.
So. Okay. Close to a trombone?
Yeah. Close to trombone, but we wouldn't admit that.
And you play, it has vowels, right?
It does, yeah.
Three?
And the name, four. And
four.
Then, yeah, the name is means beautiful sounding, so that's what we strive for.
Okay. And they're played in orchestras and
they
bands?
They are not played in orchestras. They are played very rarely in orchestras, mostly in bands. And so in the United States, they're in military bands. And so I pretty quickly had to choose my career path that wasn't going to be based on that. So.
And just a month ago, I heard a euphonium at Corky Siegel's Chamber Blues. Mark Agnor, one of the violinists, doubles on euphonium.
Really? Blues? Wow. And so when did you come to Krannert?
I actually started working there as a sophomore in college in 1987. And I worked as a cashier in the ticket office was where I started.
And how did you get into your present work with patron services, with marketing, with letting people know about what's available at this wonderful place?
It was a combination of being very fortunate to know some terrific people at the center and in the arts on campus that provided me a lot of opportunities, and then also being willing to do just about any work that needed to be done. So I worked in the ticket office. I did internships. I worked at other arts-related jobs on campus and just kept being there when opportunities arose.
Now, what drew you to music in the first place? What value did it have for you?
Well, that's interesting because John and I were talking this week, and I said that sometimes musicians or artists are some of the worst at articulating the values of the arts, possibly because it's something for many of them they've done their whole lives. I think I enjoy the process, partly the tackling of a project and just the simple improvement of the skills and the presentation and the communication. So some elements for me weren't the enormous sort of spiritual aspect, but more the process and the product I really enjoyed. Now, in my current work, I feel that I really am tied. I really see people's reactions to performances and to our education and outreach events, and really see those values in play, I think, even possibly more than when I was performing. So.
Now, you talked about the product, the performance, but what about the people? Do you like being around musicians and other artists?
Yes, I do, actually. And that's, again, part of the benefit of my job is the people who work there are, you know, really interesting people, down to earth, nice. And so are the artists that come in. You know, again, a wide spectrum, just as in any job, but we've met some absolutely terrific artists who come in and who are passionate about connecting with the people they're in touch with.
But without naming names, have there been prima donnas?
Oh, yes. Only maybe, you know, one a decade. Yeah.
When, John, when you decided to end up, you've ended up teaching in the humanities. What drew you to the humanities, to the arts?
I absolutely have no idea.
Really?
Other than that I'm fascinated by the arts. Mine is a long and checkered history. I have, among other things, been a Scarver's helper in a steel mill and a racehorse hot walker.
I don't know what a Scarver is.
Somebody who burns the crust off of very, very hot slabs of steel.
Wow.
And I was a Teamster, and I taught kindergarten, and I taught graduate school courses. And one of the things that happened at one point, I spent about 10 years finding the hidden pictures as one of the editors of Highlights for Children, and was encouraged to get a graduate degree at that point, and thought that a degree in English would be wonderful. I could sit around and read the great books of the Western world.
Sure.
Someone else would pay my tuition.
Yeah. Did your family, was your family involved in music, in theater, in literature?
My mother had piano lessons as a child. That was not a pleasant experience. And so growing up, I had no phonograph. We listened to almost no music on the radio.
Really?
She was a children's librarian, and we had a book-rich household.
Mm-hmm.
But musical arts in particular were not part of my childhood.
We're fortunate in this community of Champaign-Urbana to have the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, and they bring in such a wealth of wonderful talent in all sorts of things. One of the things that convinced my wife and myself to decide to retire here in a few years is because of that. We just enjoy music and the theater and dance and opera and all the things that are available at Krannert relatively inexpensively. How did it come about?
Ah, that's a great question. The center opened in 1969. It was a gift of the Krannerts. Herman Krannert was a graduate of and basically patented the process for corrugated cardboard, and has left gifts throughout the Midwest in business schools, heart care centers, art centers. So really has certainly made an impact in many lives. And I've sometimes thought that it would be fun to make a Krannert pilgrimage to the various philanthropic gifts that were left. The programming has, you know, there's been a core of classical programming from the beginning, a core of a relationship with the educational departments of music, theater, and dance. That is one of the things that makes the center, if not absolutely unique, then unusual, in that it is very closely tied professional and academic departments and staff members working together. And as you've seen from being an attender, the programming has continued to develop and evolve throughout the years.
And it's become more diverse in recent years, hasn't it?
It has.
That's been a conscious decision to include more popular music, jazz, all sorts of.
Yeah, it is. And actually, one of the things that we're focusing on this year, we are talking about this season as being all about the mix. And that is one of the elements that really defines the center and also the people who use it. And actually, John was sort of one example and an inspiration for some of the the copy that we wrote, because we had an event last February with the Boat Drunks, a local Jimmy Buffett band, and that was in February, you know, in the middle of, you know, cold champagne February in our lobby, and about 1,200 people showed up in, you know, Hawaiian shirts and really enjoyed themselves. And John, right, just before this event, there was a scholarly symposium on Bertolt Brecht in the studio theater. So, you know,
Talk about the mix.
Absolutely. Yeah. The quintessence of Krannert was somebody going to the scholarly symposium and then coming out and enjoying an evening of Jimmy Buffett music.
Now, Krannert, as we've just mentioned, is not just about classical music, but that has been the core of it from the beginning, right?
I believe so. In addition to the academic
theater, and dance,
exactly, yeah, sure. Exactly. But classical music, we do have a very strong core. Our director Mike Ross is completely committed to that, as well as to the diversity in the mix. And I think it is growing rarer among university presenters. It's growing, I think, a little bit more difficult to keep that commitment. Now, within even those classical offerings, there's an incredible range of performers working.
Give us some examples.
We are very excited. This coming year, we actually have two performances on our Great Hall series that are debuts at Krannert Center. So the vocalist Cecilia Bartoli is going to be making her first performance at Krannert Center, and that's in October.
One of the most highly sought after
soloists. Absolutely. Uh-huh. And Mike's been working on her to come perform since he arrived here. It's, as you can imagine, part of the challenge is just scheduling. Folks have, even performers have day jobs. And so we're very, very excited about that.
And when will she be here?
She will be here October 14th.
Now, is it sold out?
That is not sold out yet. No. And information.
That's part of the Great Hall series.
It is part of the Great Hall series, yeah.
What percentage of seats are sold to series ticket holders, roughly?
Well, we've done very well this year. It's been a really strong season, and I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but roughly half.
I see.
Yeah, I would say.
Okay. So are there usually tickets available even up to the week of the performance?
Well, it all depends on the performance. It's always best to check it out in advance. But even after tickets, even after we've sold the majority of tickets, it's always worth checking, because one service we provide that not many people are aware of, I think, is that we offer credits for if you can't attend a performance. If you bring us your tickets by 6 p.m. the day before the performance, you can receive a center check gift certificate, basically, in the value of your tickets. And so, we then get those back out to the public. We want, obviously, as many people who want to see the show see it as they can.
So if people who have season tickets, as my wife and I have for years and have loved it, but if you find that you're unable to come at the last minute to something, you can turn your ticket in, get your money back.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
And someone else can be in those seats.
That's right. When we've said come as you are, leave different, or don't come at all. So we know that the time commitment is a big, big challenge for people.
Sure. John, how did you get involved with Krannert?
Well, what little I know about the arts, I've come to without any formal education. I'm strictly an amateur from the root of that, the Latin amare, to love. And Krannert Center in many ways has been my kindergarten and my postdoc. It's been a place that has offered me a virtual backstage pass. At one point, I listened to the conductor of the St. Petersburg Philharmonic talk about pieces that he'd be conducting half an hour later on the stage of the Great Hall.
Uh-huh.
I took a local entrepreneur to an open rehearsal of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, and their visit had been co-sponsored by the College of Business, because this leaderless organization offers lessons for business management.
Uh-huh.
I sat fascinated during a master class by Murray Pariah, watching a world-class performer nurture emerging artists. I plunked down next to Aileen Hale, a renowned Tennessee Williams scholar, during a performance of excerpts from several of his early works that she had guided.
Uh-huh.
Just Sunday salons where you're seated on the stage for chamber music.
Right up close to the performers.
Up close, right. Kurt Elling and Lawrence Hobgood in cabaret setting. Afterglow jazz performance with Joel Smirnoff, the first violinist of the Juilliard String Quartet. So the Juilliard had just done their program, and then here was a free concert, and the first violinist walks out and jams with some local jazz musicians, quite talented jazz musicians.
So from Beethoven to jazz.
Absolutely. Right. And just the whole range. Jonathan Feinberg previewing his upcoming PBS documentary, Imagining America, Icons of 20th Century American Art. That was a media event during the last season at Granite.
But how can you afford all this? Now, some
of
them you said are
things,
free.
That's of those idea. Things that I just mentioned, the only one for which there was a charge was Kurt Elling and Lawrence Hobgood in Cabaret. Everything else was the surrounding programming. For instance, I purchased a ticket to the St. Petersburg Philharmonic, but the pre-concert talk or the Afterglow concerts are all free. That's incredible.
It really is. We're talking today about the value of music and the arts with two folks who appreciate Krannert Center, one who is on the staff there, Maureen Reagan, and John Bennett, who's a teacher at Lakeland College of the Humanities, but who appreciates Krannert, and we've heard some of the things he's appreciated about it. This is a live program, and we're happy to have callers with comments or questions. Perhaps some of our listeners would like to share some of their experiences with Krannert's programs, either the free ones or the ones that cost a bit. Do give us a call. We have a line that's available anywhere the program can be heard. It's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. In Champaign-Urbana, you can reach several local lines by punching in 333-9455. So we're happy to have listeners make comments or ask questions to our guest today as we talk about the value of music and the arts. And I might just explain that for listeners who had hoped tonight to hear Pastor Roger Diggs talk about God and the ivory-billed woodpecker, unfortunately, Pastor Diggs was hospitalized this last week. He is home now but is recovering slowly, and we do think of him as he recovers. Yeah, we do want him back on the program to talk about his interest in birding from a religious perspective. And that will be scheduled as soon as we can. But our fill-in guests we're delighted to have, and I do want to thank Roger and John for coming at the last minute this week after we heard that Roger was ill. So getting back to talking about the value of music and the arts. We've talked about some of the classical music programming at Krannert, and you mentioned there were two special things coming up in the Great Hall series. Can people still buy the whole series if they choose?
We have sold out one of the performances, and that's Yo-Yo Ma's performance.
The cellist.
It's always worth checking back because tickets will become available. Okay. But for the moment, there aren't any tickets available.
But there are tickets available for all
for
the
everything
other performances.
Else, exactly.
And check me on this, Maureen, but my understanding is that this season, Yo-Yo Ma will make two performances in North America, one of which will be here, the other at Carnegie Hall.
We're very happy to say that's true.
So very fortunate. Very fortunate to have him here.
And that was actually the first professional performance that I saw at Krannert Center was Yo-Yo Ma and Emmanuel X. So I have some fondness for that.
I'm sure. Now, when is he coming?
He is going to be here April 7th.
In the spring.
In the spring.
Okay. And tell us about, let's go next to my favorite. What about the chamber music series? I just love the small number of instruments, partly maybe because I can hear them often more clearly, the different parts.
Sure. And I understand that I have, as part of the Creative Intersections work, I've been able in the last few years to actually be closer to a lot of the performances. And, for instance, the Alexander String Quartet came and did the wonderful 3 weeks of residency with us. And, sitting up close for those performances and really starting to understand it a new way, the physicality of the playing really put me in much better touch with some of those events and hearing the feeling the wind come off of a player's bow and things like that. So.
Now, what are creative intersections?
They are actually education or outreach events, and those words, there's nothing wrong with the words education or outreach, except that it's much more of a two-way street. And so through a lot of brainstorming, creative intersections, you know, that's the name we chose because it's really not a kind of a top-down kind of thing or a, you know, a we are it and we're reaching out. It's really interaction, and they are events that take place outside of the traditional performance venue. They could be lectures, they could be master classes, they could be for beginners, they could be for people who are already, you know, practicing artists in their field. Wide variety of events, and as John said, a lot of them are free, and that's thanks to donors, sponsors, university support.
And you've even gone to strange locations with some of your musicians, like YMCAs.
Absolutely, right. YMCAs, and speaking of birding, the Nature Center, the Urbana Park District Nature Center, Alexander did a program there on sounds of nature in the music of Beethoven, which was a great program.
And schools?
Schools, absolutely. We have an artist coming in the fall who's interested in playing in jails. We have, you know,
it's a poet, right?
This is one of the guitarists actually in for the for the guitar festival. And we've played in the News Gazette at the News Gazette, done public performances in their offices. So lots of different settings.
Okay, now let me just push again on this big question for our hour together. Why is it a value to take these things to schools, to prisons?
Yeah. Well, there's probably a couple levels or more of answer to that question. One, just on the purely practical level of, you know, not everybody's going to come to the center, going to have the opportunity to do that, going to have the chance to do that. And things are heard differently in someone's own environment. Another level of that, and then I'll also turn this to John here, goes back to the things we have been talking about and one of the things John and I had talked about the opportunity to be open to the transformative power that is present in the arts and that I believe is present in the arts, and not just in the arts but in so many disciplines and callings in life. But I think the arts are a particularly powerful way to express it.
Transforming.
When you talk about the value or the power of the arts, through a curious set of circumstances, I found myself last summer at a script reading in the living room of a brownstone in Gramercy Park. And this was put together to drum up some backing for an action epic film based on the life of Toussaint Louverture, the former slave who rallied blacks in the Haitian Revolution. So here I was, a powerless white guy from the Midwest, sitting in a living room with Danny Glover, who's going to direct the film, and such luminary guests as Ossie Davis, Ruby Dee, and Harry Belafonte. I dare you to tell the four of them that the arts don't matter. Think of Belafonte's monumental anthology of black music, The Long Road to Freedom. Think of Davis's character muttering the title line in Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. Mm. Think of Ruby Dee's performance in A Raisin in the Sun. In fact, Danny Glover had no intention whatsoever of getting into acting when he was a college student. Street theater was just his means of political action in Oakland and San Francisco in the 60s. Mm. That was what he got into the arts with, and it's enabled him to be an ambassador and a powerful political voice, as well as a very engaging actor and director now.
Steve, we had talked a little bit before we came on the air about poetry, and I read a book, or actually listened to a book a couple of years ago that influenced me a lot in some of the writing I had done then did for Cranert Center, and that was Kathleen Norris's The Cloister Walk. She draws a lot of parallels between she talks about the quality of liturgy and also draws parallels between poetry and prayer and just some interesting things that we then built on. But she talks about the quality of attention. She says, maybe it is the useless silence of contemplation, that certain quality of attention that distinguishes both the poem and the prayer. I regard monks and poets as the best degenerates in America. Both have a finely developed sense of the sacred potential in all things. Both value image and symbol over utilitarian purpose. They recognize the transformative power hiding in the simplest things, and it leads them to commit absurd acts. And she also talks about the role of ceremony in the monastic life and mentions that the monastic life has this in common with the artistic one. Both are attempts to pay close attention to objects, events, and natural phenomena that otherwise would get chewed up in the daily grind. Mm-hmm. So I think talking about bringing the arts to places one would never expect them, that's a lot of what we do, trying to commit this act of attention so that the meaningful parts of our lives don't just get chewed up in our everyday obligations.
Hmm. I distracted us from learning about what's coming up with chamber music at Cranert this fall.
We're easily distractible. We actually have a very exciting chamber music series, partly because of the artists involved, but because most of them are actually double performances. We open up with the Emerson String Quartet with the Pacifica Quartet. They will be joining to perform the Mendelssohn Octet, and the Emerson will also perform Beethoven's Quartet, Opus 132.
Now, the Pacifica is in residence here at the University of Illinois.
They are, exactly. And so they are a world-class quartet that actually is in residence here in town. And again, that's a great example of the opportunities we have to join education and professional performance, mm-hmm. which we're really excited about. We also have the Paris Piano Trio and the Isai Quartet in November. Those are our fall performances. And in the spring, we're going to have the St. Lawrence String Quartet with David Finkel in Wuhan. And David Finkel is actually the cellist in the Emerson Quartet, so we're going to have some repeat visitors this year, which we're excited about.
Now, there are some people that are afraid of chamber music. Why is that?
Well, I think John can jump in here too, but I can understand that. I think it's a fairly intense experience, and I think probably people who think I'm going to go in there, I don't know any of these pieces, I have to sit quietly, I'm uh-huh. going to be very visible, uh-huh. I don't know if I'm going to like it. Those all may be parts of that concern. They also may perceive that there is less, variety or grandeur than in a symphony performance, but that isn't, I think the chamber performances bring something entirely different but as wonderful as the symphony performances.
I've read, and as a musician you may know, is chamber music a favorite of musicians?
It is, actually, yeah. And I think people do enjoy, musicians, performers do enjoy being caught up in that incredible sound of an orchestra, but I think the independence and the rigors of the performance in chamber music, I think, are very appealing to musicians, and they feel they are more part of the creative process.
Mm. So many folks talk about the intimate conversation between the musicians, say, in a string quartet. I think it is a particular favorite of musicians. But you talked about chamber music being perhaps somewhat off-putting to folks. One of the first things I ought to point out is that Maureen can go through some of the repertoire that they're going to be performing, but much of this breaks down many of the traditional patterns. This is not your father's Oldsmobile in terms of chamber music. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of a place that is warm and welcoming, open and receptive, if I were going to give a 5-star rating for any particular aspect of Cranert's programming, it would be that sense of making folks welcome. The fiddler Carrie Rodriguez tells of her mother having taken her to a concert as a 5-year-old, taken her to hear Itzhak Perlman. And at one point, the 5-year-old jumped up and started clapping in delight in the middle of a song. The audience turned to stare, but she says, Itzhak looked down and just smiled at me.
Sure.
He didn't scowl. He didn't look down his nose at this bit of rabble that had found its way into the concert hall. He reacted generously and appreciatively. She went on to study at the Oberlin Conservatory and the Berklee School of Music, and now in her mid-20s has a respectable recording career. That might never have happened if he had reacted less generously and less openly, and that's the sort of thing I see happening routinely at Krannert.
And it's interesting to me that even the dress code has changed over the years. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when people just felt they had to dress up to the nines to go to a concert, and now people feel much more relaxed about it, and I think that's very appropriate. I mean, I've taken students to chamber music concerts and symphony concerts, and they'll come in their jeans and a shirt or a sweater, and it's just fine.
It's been very exciting to explore. I think a lot of us on staff are very are very welcoming people, for lack of a better term, and we do want that experience to be very open, and we have worked hard to break down some of the barriers, dress code being one of them. We also want it to be a place where if people want to dress up, that's great.
Sure.
You know? So the come as you are or leave different, I mean, we really do mean that. And we try to really have our act together and make all the preparations so that a person can come in and enjoy it in whatever frame of mind, if they're going to have a deep experience, a light experience,
sure.
or, be sad, be happy, so that they can find whatever they need to find there. And I think it is very important for us to be open and welcoming to those experiences.
We're about halfway through our program today, and I want to get back to our guests, Maureen Reagan and John Bennett, in a moment. And I think where we'll start up again is, what are the expectations for the audience in terms of how quiet do you have to be, that sort of thing. But let me take just a minute to let listeners know what's coming up on future Keeping the Faith programs. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And next week I'm pleased to be interviewing Laura Swinford and Jenny DeWer from the Crisis Nursery. Owen Derrick will be our guest on Keeping the Faith August 14th. He'll be talking about From Technology to Theology. Owen Derrick is a Scot in this country for, I guess, about 6 years. He's a Lutheran seminary student in Chicago, and he's come to seminary after a career in information technology. And computers and all of that. And so it's very interesting. It will be interesting, I think, to talk with him about his own life path from technology to theology. Later in August, Colleen Vojak and others will be talking about the Interfaith Alliance. In September, Professor Bill Plaker from Wabash College will be our guest on September 4th, talking about callings, 20 centuries of Christian wisdom on vocations. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith on WILL AM 580 from 5 to 6 Central Time on Sundays. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA. The University Y is the oldest student organization, continuous student organization on campus. It's been at the U of I since 1873. Helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. One of the services to the community we're providing this summer is Dump and Run, where we encourage students and others who might have some things they're tired of or can't get back home, instead of throwing it in the dumpsters and adding to the waste stream, to donate it to the Y. And we collect these things and organize them and put them in categories and weed out some of the few things that might be really useless. But everything else, we have a grand garage sale this year. It'll be the last week in August after school starts at the Stock Pavilion at the university on Pennsylvania Avenue. And for 3 days, we will sell furniture and bikes and household goods and records and tapes and CDs and books and all sorts of things, very inexpensively, so that new students and others can furnish their apartments and dorm rooms and make use of these things that might have just got tossed out. So we'll be accepting more things that we're collecting the first week of August, starting tomorrow. So if people have things, do bring them to the University of Hawaii at 1001 South Wright Street. That's the corner of Wright and Chalmers on campus between 8:30 and 4, Monday through Friday. Let's see. I'd like to make an announcement of a couple events coming up August 5th and 6th. These are Days of Remembrance. And there will be a lecture by Fred Lam at Loomis Lab, Physics Lab on campus, Goodwood and Green, at 7 p.m. August 5th, countering the threat of nuclear terrorism. These events are honoring the victims of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And on August 9th, Tuesday, August 9th, there'll be a film at the First United Methodist Church in Champaign at 6:30, a 30-minute film called Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes. It's a film appropriate for ages 8 and up about a Japanese girl who contracts leukemia as a result of radiation from the atomic bomb, but her very positive response to that tragedy. At 8 o'clock, there'll be a procession to Westside Park to float peace lanterns in the fountain at Westside Park in Champaign. So that's Tuesday, August 9, the film at 6:30, and then a procession at 8 after the discussion. On Friday, August 5th, lecture by Fred Lam at Loomis Lab, 7 p.m. on campus, Countering the Threat of Nuclear Terrorism. These are events sponsored by about 30 different local community groups. Coming up on WILL this week on the Afternoon Magazine on Wednesday is a program that might be of particular interest to listeners to Keeping the Faith. Celeste Quinn will be talking with Angela Bonavoglia. The title of the talk is Good Catholic Girls, How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. So we'll be talking about these women's issues and church reform. That's Wednesday, a little bit after 1, on Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Some of you who get Patterns Magazine might have noticed that they were very kind and printed a poem that I'd written about a WILL FM program that I dearly love called Pipe Dreams. The host is Michael Barone from Minneapolis Public Radio, and every Sunday night from 8:30 to 10, wonderful pipe organ music is broadcast on WILL FM. And here's a very short poem that I wrote about that the editor of Patterns very kindly published this month. It's called Sweet Summer Evenings. My youngest brother, as a very young, just 17, student in college, would smuggle M&Ms into operas. Singers would reach a crescendo that was made more pleasurable by the added chocolate. Since they do melt in the hand and sounds of crinkling brown packaging would bring shocked looks, even glares, he hid a sock inside his suit coat. Pipe organs are always inside concert hall or church, but I double my pleasure with my parked car door open wide each Sunday night as the sounds rumble from FM public radio. It seems the prairie sunset has a taste. Pipe Dreams. A poem I wrote called Sweet Summer Evenings, and I dedicate it to Michael Barone and his program. And if any listeners would like to join me tonight, later this Sunday night, watching the sunset. Can't predict exactly what it'll look like, but it's often interesting. And listening to Pipe Dreams, maybe from your car radio, if you want to park it near mine. I'll be at my country house, and I'm going to risk telling you where I live. If you'd like to come out, have room for quite a few cars. If you'd like to listen to Pipe Dreams and watch the sunset, you'll need to come a little before. I think the sun sets about, 8:20 or something now. So it'll actually set a bit, and then we'll hear Pipe Dreams start. But here's how to get to my house. We'll sit outside. It's, what did you call this, Maureen? A drive-in pipe organ recital.
Oh my God. With bring your own M&Ms.
Yeah, bring your own refreshments. But if you want to come out and sit with me and hear this, I live out in the country south of Urbana. To get there, go to Old Church Road, which goes from Savoy East to 130. And 1 mile before you get to 130, if you're heading east on Old Church Road from Savoy, turn right or south on County Road 1500. And ours is the strange modern-looking house about half a mile down. It's the only house in the middle of that mile that looks like that. The address is 1148 on County Road 1500 East, south of Urbana, about 3 miles. So if you want to join me tonight, come on out. I'll be there listening to pipe organ music outside, watching the sunset. Now, is this a competition for Craner? Do you have anything going on tonight?
There sounds nothing better. No. Might get fired for saying that.
Okay. Getting back to our discussion about the value of music. As my little poem indicates, some people get upset if there's noise during a concert, mm-hmm. inside a concert hall, if there is crinkling paper, if somebody coughs even.
Sure.
Or clears their throat loudly. And they are trying to hear the music.
Sure.
And that's what other people are there for, so you should be quiet. But how quiet do you have to be?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And you'd probably get a different answer from every person you asked that of. Each of us comes at it from a little different perspective. Now, I'm going to answer you as the role of my job, and that is – so it's going to be a little bit oblique.
Okay.
That is that there are – different, you know, sort of best environments for experiences. And we have tried to open things up by creating a lot of different environments. There are also folks who would be very upset that the dress code has, you know, relaxed at events. And so, again, we are working to create a place where everyone can feel welcome. Now, I think we face the same challenges as you know, churches and restaurants and lots of other places that that are, you know, you can't please everyone. But
sure.
But we also, let's say for a chamber music concert, you know, it's an intimate performance, and those noises are going to be probably, you know, amplified. So it's partly a matter of people feeling comfortable in the environment, and then they feeling welcomed and that they belong there, and then somehow the behavior is easier to match to the need than I don't not know.
So in the concert hall itself, if you're in the Great Hall or if you're in one of the other places where there's music that's been carefully prepared and is being wonderfully performed, you should be as quiet as possible out of respect for other people who are trying to hear each note and to the performers who've worked hard to present those notes the best possible way. But if you're outside in the what's the big lounge called?
That's right, out in Interlude, or
yeah.
That's right. And the nice thing about being at Interlude,
there are people
is that
may be talking in the background or having a drink.
That's
or
right.
Whatever.
That's right. And we try to match each artist with each. Mm-hmm. You know, artists also need to know what kind of environment they're going to be in. That's only fair, you know, to them. And some of them say, you know, this performance is really going to be best presented in this way, or and you were saying it does become a matter of, you know, respect for the people around you, and then also the mutual respect that we're all only human, you know, and people.
You strike a balance. It's,
that's right.
You want the family in the congregation, and
yeah.
You don't want a kid screaming throughout the sermon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
want patrons in the library. You want a lively atmosphere, but you also want people to be able to read and come and enjoy
and
the materials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a problem a lot of places. I was at a concert of an alternative rock group, mm-hmm. here in Champaign, mm-hmm. at a bar, mm-hmm. and they had amplified music, mm-hmm. so it was plenty loud, mm-hmm. but there were a couple pieces where the lead singer he'd written these songs himself, mm-hmm. but they were quieter songs, and mm-hmm. he tried to quiet the crowd, mm-hmm. down that was talking, mm-hmm. and yelling in the background, mm-hmm. so that the people who wanted to listen could, and he wasn't very successful.
That's right. And also, I think
it's a problem in all kinds of venues.
Sure. And as music, as amplified music becomes louder, people are talking louder, and
louder.
So their
sure.
sensation, you know, becomes
yeah.
that way.
Yeah. So what happens if you do cough? You just try to get a cough drop from an usher. Yeah.
Every usher has a pocket full of cough drops.
And hopefully they'll be there before you even cough. Oh.
What else is coming up at Cranert this year?
We are very excited to I'm excited about everything that's going on, but three items actually that we're starting our season with. One is our opening night party, and that is going to be an informal, loud evening, and that is with a band from L.A. called The Breakestra. It's a very fun and funky band, and it's going to be an event that's going to be it's not targeted toward kids, but it's going to be family-friendly. And it's on September 10th, and admission is $5. So it's really just kind of a token.
A token,
a cover charge. Local vendors will be selling food there, so you can come and get dinner there as well. We're going to offer tours of the center at 7 and 8 o'clock. And there'll be a DJ that starts out the evening and then live music and also some other dance artists and sort of performance artists that are going to be visiting us as well. So that is actually really just a celebration of the season and of our patrons and of our sponsors. And
give us the date again.
That's going to be on September 10th. It's a Saturday evening. And
$5 tickets available at Cranert.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of disco meets hip-hop meets a street fair.
That's right. Okay. We said you can wear 2005's latest or the 1970s finest. So whatever you'd like to do. We also are excited to be presenting the world premiere of Michael Rouse's End of Cinematics. He came a few years ago with here at the center with Dennis Cleveland, which was a talk show opera. And this has been a very exciting process because the university, both Cranert Center and other areas in the university, such as NCSA, have been integrally involved in developing the piece. And it's actually going to be the premiere here. And we'll go on to tour from here. And then rounding out our September will be the four-day wall-to-wall guitar festival. And that features over 30 artists in 4 days, many main stage events that are ticketed events, and many events that are free events in the lobby.
Wall-to-wall guitars, 30 different guitarists at different times, different styles, jazz,
different
rock,
styles.
Pop,
yep.
Classical.
Pat Metheny and Bill Frisell celebrating six-string jazz.
Taj Mahal
with the blues. We actually have a full night of the blues with Rory Block, Mamadou Diabate, and Taj Mahal.
Now that made John smile. Are you a particular lover of the blues?
Of the blues, and I was just thinking about the variety. This is, Thursday through Sunday, and it really is. Wall-to-wall guitars, the Assad brothers and Vinicius Cantuaria and guitar come these folks will come at guitar music from every possible angle, every point on the compass. And this is a particularly good example of one of Cranert's really successful efforts at making the center more open and welcoming, more receptive. They often talk about the edifice complex, that imposing set of stairs and the lofty facade that you have to breach before you can get in at any of these things. And having this funky party, the opening night party with Breakestra on September 10th, having this wall-to-wall guitar festival where folks who are interested in classical guitar, who are interested in blues, who are interested in finger picking and slide and so on, they'll all be served there.
You know, I've never felt that. I've never felt that it was a building that was difficult to, that wasn't welcoming. Maybe it's because my grandmother took me to concerts at Smith Music Hall when I was 9, or something. But I've never felt the buildings were imposing. Yeah. I've always felt they were welcoming. And Cranert particularly, I mean, when you can drive right into the basement, two levels of parking, free. And even if those are full, which occasionally they are, I've never had to park more than a half block away to get to it. And it's free parking at night anywhere. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Let me just pick up on that. At one point, my older son was working for the New York Philharmonic, and he was telling me about this pilot project of drive-time concerts that they were putting together. That way somebody you know, this would be a concert that might be at 6 in the evening rather than later. And he said that way someone won't have to get dinner after work and then get to Lincoln Center by 8 and then not get home to the Burbs until after midnight. And I sort of chuckled on the phone and said, yeah, I know what you mean. Last night I went to a concert at Krannert. I had to leave home 15 minutes beforehand.
Yeah.
Had to fight my way across town for about 4 minutes, pull into a free parking space, settle down into an eighth row seat to hear. And then, you know, it would have been whatever. This season it'll be the Vienna Philharmonic.
Sure.
And yeah. I didn't get home until almost 10:15.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the heart to add that
it only cost
the ticket price was one, and the yeah. other was that although Lincoln Center's Avery Fisher Hall and Krannert's Vollinger Great Hall, both designed by the same architect
yeah.
Ours is universally considered the superior performance place.
The acoustics are wonderful. It's visually delightful. It's large and yet intimate. The wood makes you feel so comfortable. There are even different sizes of seats are a different size person.
It's astonishing to hear performers talk about the live sound of the hall,
yeah.
and I've heard them talk about other performance spaces as well within the Krannert Center complex. The Chicago Symphony has come down to record. The
sure.
Sydney Orchestra is recorded as well mm. within the Great Hall.
So it's such a marvelous resource. And why? Well, this maybe is an implied criticism of, mm-hmm. of the marketing director here.
I can handle it.
What about diversity? What about diversity of audience?
Yeah.
It's a graying audience yeah. for classical music. Now, yes, when you have jazz, you get a different audience. When you have the dance programs, you have a different audience. Some of the theater performances. But for classical music, it's pretty old and it's pretty white.
Rather than force Maureen to defend herself.
I'm looking at the color hair of the two people I'm sitting with.
Let me jump in as a gray-haired old fogey. You mentioned jazz, and
sure.
certainly those performances do offer some diversity. But think, too, about some of the programming efforts where the folks at Krannert have tried to tear down the walls.
Yeah.
They organized Jazz Threads pub crawls and had performers in various venues throughout Champaign-Urbana. Java and jazz free Saturday morning concerts where you could get juice or coffee and a bagel and walk into the Great Hall and hear Cecil Bridgewater and company just let loose. But they did that with the Alexander String Quartet when they were in residence and were doing the whole Beethoven quartet cycle. Bagels and Beethoven was the way they billed that the previous year. Think about some of these others. Maureen mentioned the News Gazette building. The Alexander Quartet also performed in area schools. Krannert's collaboration with the Champaign Park District in a series of courses called Sound Advice that were just wonderful. The free interval concerts in the lobby where you'll see the entire range from preschoolers through homeschoolers and business and university folks on their lunch hour through retirees who are there for a free concert and they're eating a box lunch and having a ball. And so those are things that are attempting to bring in more diverse audiences, wider audiences.
We're down to about our last 5 or 6 minutes, but let me encourage if there are other listeners who'd like to call, 333-9455 is the local number if you're in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Many people are afraid of contemporary music, of music written and performed, written by people who are alive. How does Krannert try to help people overcome that fear, mm-hmm. that lack of understanding or appreciation?
Sure. It brings to mind a couple of one of the projects that we've talked a lot about today, and that is the Alexander String Quartet project. Augusta Reed Thomas, who is a prominent American contemporary composer, was commissioned to write a piece in response to the quartets. I think that the reception of that piece was helped by the Alexander Quartet having formed a relationship basically with the community over 3 weeks during the year. And then Augusta Reed Thomas also came in, spoke about the piece. John and I have both discussed that having something to listen for, even if you're listening to a new piece of, you know, traditional classical music, makes a world of difference to be able to feel like you can sit down somewhere in that piece and enjoy it. So we do try to do that. We've been able to Franz Gruber, a composer, was able to come in before a performance a couple of years ago of one of his contemporary pieces by one of the, you know, traditional classical orchestras, and again speak about the piece. And I've participated actually in performances where it was actually the U of I chorale. We performed a piece by Ligeti, which was a contemporary piece, and we performed it the first time and then stopped that, and the conductor spoke with the audience about the piece, and then he said, okay, we're going to do it again. Now, that was pretty daunting because it was a really difficult piece, but there are many different aspects of getting comfortable with those things, and I think the fact of that you can have many different reactions to them, and that's okay. We talked about the loved it, hated it thing, and, you know, either one of those reactions is feasible, and we get all kinds of reactions. But also talking about the importance, we do try to talk about the importance of research, which is new work in the arts, the importance of keeping both celebrating the history, and also we talk about creating the future of the past, so new renditions of old works, and also the creation of new works themselves.
John Bennett, when you're teaching at Lakeland College in the humanities, how do you introduce students to the idea of something new in the arts, in music?
John Cage, who's one of those composers who's frustrated an awful lot of folks in his incredibly productive lifetime, was asked what his definition of music was, and he says, music is whatever I hear when I put myself in the frame of mind to be a music listener. And one of the things that I will do with students is to try to stretch them, to try to challenge them, to try to get them to think beyond, for instance, the somewhat naive notion that's frequently brought into class that art should be pretty. Many times it is. Many times it's sublime. Many times it's gorgeous. Many times it's discordant and unnerving. And its goal is to move us. In some ways, that notion of being receptive to whatever is around you is perhaps akin to the Buddhist notion of right mindfulness, or just being open and receptive, leaving yourself open to a divine presence.
And if that music is reflecting a response to a part of reality that's horrible, can we learn from it, even if it's not beautiful?
Absolutely. And we've all, I think, at one point or another, been moved by a dirge or a requiem that is overwhelmingly sad, but it's absolutely appropriate.
We're going to need to stop there, Maureen. I want to thank our guests, Maureen Regan and John Bennett, for being with us on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Let me repeat an invitation I made earlier that listeners who'd like to listen to WILL FM tonight and watch a sunset out at my country place south of Urbana, about 3 miles. You can come out on south on 130 until you get to Old Church Road, and go west half mile and then south on 1500. Our address is 1148 County Road, 1500 East. Be there about 8:15, see the sunset, and hear Pipe Dreams. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
They say variety is the spice of life, but let's be honest, spices are the spice of life. Pepper, oregano, vanilla, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. I'm Tim Fleming. Next time on the Peabody Award-winning program To the Best of Our Knowledge, Things Get Spicy. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s and light and variable winds. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the lower 90s and light and variable winds. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low in the upper 60s and light and variable winds. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.
In Eddie's family,